All right, we got Troy Crowder joining the show today. Troy, coming to us from PEI. I think you're the first guy, Troy, who's done an interview from PEI. Thank you for joining us, my friend.
Well, I figure this is the safest place so the Russians weren't hacking into my information, you know. Coming out to a little island, we got our own little zone out here.
All right, we're already putting the tinfoil hats on early where the conspiracy theories are starting already. I like where this is going. We're going to be talking about some pretty in-depth stuff here. But no, I met Troy last year, I feel like, Troy, maybe the year before, at some charity hockey event, and we sort of just gravitated towards each other as fighters do. When I meet, I meet ex-fighters all the time now, and usually I size them up, Troy, honestly, and I go, I could have handled you pretty easily, because I think the fighters have grown in the past like 20, 30, 40, 50 years, but then now they're starting to get a little smaller because hockey's getting more skilled. But you were the one guy who I was like, okay, like he was a mountain of a man. You were like 6'4", 260. I was like, okay, he's a big dude. Maybe I should, you know, take it easy. So you're thinner now. You look svelte. You look fantastic. So I'm glad you're on the show.
Well, the svelteness, I'm actually going to thank you a little bit about that, because in Moncton in end of May, someone had mentioned that you'd lost a little bit of weight.
I know.
And then I said to you, well, how did you lose it? And you said, well, you know, I don't eat during the day and wait till supper time and have lots of protein and a few veggies. And so I gave it a shot. And like, for me, it was like dramatic, because I've never watched what I've eaten. I mean, I eat anything, anytime, all the time. But as long as I'm being active, but I could keep it off. But I wasn't being active because my knees were really starting to bother me lots. So I'd put on some weight and then tried your thing. And literally, I lost 28 pounds in like 3 weeks.
And you look fantastic.
And that was fast.
You did tell me that story. So I brought that up just so I could get it documented on my podcast, because I wanted to feel good about myself. Yeah. So full transparency.
You're the slim fast guy now.
I feel so good. Well, I have the natural, I'll say my kids are like a mirror and they're super honest and they'll just call me fat nonstop. And so they're like, yeah, you're getting a little fat. You got to, you know, watch what you eat. So it's very sobering when they bring up how chubby you are. But anyways, what are you up to now? Because we're going to get into a lot. You're just enjoying retirement life.
Sort of, yeah. Like I've done a bunch of things since I retired. Like that's probably the hardest thing when you retire is like, what am I going to do next, right?
Yeah.
So I did real estate for a little bit and, you know, did some consulting here and there. And then I wanted to learn how to build when I first retired, you know. My job was to destroy things as I played hockey. And so, you know, I kind of wanted to see what the creative side of me could do. And
that's funny.
So I hired a guy to teach me how to build. So we built my cottage together, and my family owned a resort in Sudbury. So lots of old buildings on the property. So I just started kind of learning how to do this, learn how to do that, and picked away at it and got better and better. And so, yeah, so I flipped a couple of houses for a while and, you know, did a few charity events, but I didn't really want to get myself too bogged down, because I had young kids, you know, when I retired quickly, had a family, and I wanted to spend that time with them. You know, I loved my dad when I was a kid growing up, but my dad, you know, back in the era, the dads would go golfing and beer drinking and spend time with their buddies after work. They didn't do a whole lot with you. So, you know, I kind of wanted to spend more time with my kids. So I literally coached them, drove them everywhere, skiing, hockey, did so many things with my kids. We had a cottage, spent lots of time there with them. So, yeah, so I just kind of did the house renovation, flipping stuff for a while. And then I also kind of worked on my pet peeve passion, which was skating. You know, I was a pretty good athlete, hockey, golf, sport, anything, boxing, track and field, downhill ski racing. But I wasn't a great skater, and so I decided I was going to really spend a lot of time trying to figure out why. And so we had an outdoor rink just down the road from my house, and so I'd go down there every night, and I started moving my blades around. I started making my own orthotics and trying different things and how one thing led to another, and basically came down to a few things that worked, and then, you know, realize later, well, then that's just one of the many things that you can do to your skates. And so then I start getting into this extending my eyelets farther forward and allowing me to bend more. So I spent a lot of time fiddling with that and, you know, with just tools around my house, like no real scientific approach. Huh. And then I ended up patenting a couple of my inventions, a movable blade holder and the eyelet extension. And so right about that time, we ended up moving down to Barrie because I had three boys. One was downhill ski racing, two played AAA hockey. So we were always traveling anyway, so it was easier to be close to Toronto. And anyways, that's that year I end up fitting Aaron Ekblad with my eyelet extensions on his skates. Because he had lace bite from World Junior training camp and he couldn't put a skate on skate. It was too painful. And so he'd heard through the grapevine that I was doing this work because I was down in Barrie. And so I went and fit him that morning and he skated around the ice. He goes, I thought I wasn't going to play for weeks. He goes, I'm going to play tonight. And he goes, I can't believe how much this alleviates this pain around my ankle. And so anyways, I worked with him for the whole year, had to develop new plastics because he kept breaking them all the time. So I worked with a company down there. And so yeah, that was kind of the start of things. And then from that, I've been on some trips overseas with the military to Afghanistan. Brian Burke was on those trips. Burke and I got chatting and I was telling him about what I was doing. And I said, well, I fit this kid Ekblad. He goes, yeah, he's top five kind of rated guy. I said, skates better now than he ever has. You should come see him. And he goes, yeah, okay. So we met together, watched him play. And he's like, yeah, he's definitely skates better. So anyways, Ekblad ended up going number one that year, but Burke ended up bringing me into Calgary to do player development and work on some skating and stuff with young guys there. And so, yeah, I did that for a few years and then did a little consulting here and there and then got into politics and ran back home for MPP and came second and then ran for my mayor and didn't get that. So then kind of went back into the house flipping for a little while. And yeah, then the knees got really bad. And so, yeah, basically just went for stem cells on the knees again. And now I'm back feeling great. And who knows what the future is going to hold.
Okay. Well, okay. So I was expecting, you know, I'm doing good. Just, you know, keeping busy. And Troy gives me this, and you give me this insane answer with all these things. So you're just tinkering with skates and you're off time and you develop this. What is there's a lot there to unpack, but what's an eyelet extension? Do you move it up, down, in? Like, how do you?
Yeah. So basically it's just a piece of plastic and it's got a couple of holes and it clicks on to your existing eyelets, the top two. And then the plastic then extends forward and you have new eyelets farther ahead. So, you know, if you put on your boot, you know, and you look across where the eyelets go through, you know, if you have a little tiny skinny ankle like this, you have a lot of room to bend in your skate, move forward or whatever, right? So I say that great NHL skaters look like 14-year-old girls' ankles. They all have these tiny little ankles. Or you take a guy like, say, a Chelios or a Coffey, where they got long feet, but they're not that tall. And so their boot volume is big at the top, but they still got smaller legs. And so they can bend and they can get in there and they can get a good stride going. And so me, I'm past my eyelets, like I'm past where the eyelets are before I even start to bend, like when I'm straight up and down, because I have a big, thick bone and I had those Bauer heel bumps, you know, from... Yep. The rubbing in your skates back in the day. And so anyways, I extend them. My eyelets are like a couple inches ahead of where my old eyelets are. So then I can actually bend now and skate. So I remember being in Vancouver my last year and I end up just cutting a piece of like sewer pipe, like a round sewer pipe. So I cut it in half like that. And then I just stuck it onto the front of my skate and taped it around to alleviate that pressure of that skate bite. And then it allowed me to flex a little bit more. And I was like, oh, this feels good. It didn't really solve a lot of my issues of like bending, but it gave me a little bit more, but it alleviated the pain. And so when I retired, that's kind of when I went like, something to do with this bending here is my issue, right? And that's kind of it led to trying all kinds of different things. And yeah, just you learn the most by trial and error, right? Like every it's time funny. You make a mistake, you're like, okay, that didn't work.
Yeah, the personality, how different personalities work, because if I would have, and I had that problem, Troy, where I just, but instead of trying to fix it or do anything about it to improve my, I just like, oh, it's fine. Everybody deals with this and you just move on. And I spend 30 years with that issue. You don't. And that's why you're better than I am, because you see a problem and you solve it. Whereas I just gut it through. Like I had pneumonia for like a month before my wife's like, you should probably get that checked. I'm like, yeah, I've been feeling pretty crappy for a while. She's like, yeah, you should probably go in. And it's just like, I just put things off and I'm like almost dying. And she's like, yeah, get it checked out, but you would probably get a cure for something. And I would just suck it up and die on the side of the road. So it's a little intimidating now talking to you, I'll be honest, but we got to go back because you're here because you're Mr. Troy Crowder. You're Mr. Tough yeah. Guy. You're who I was when I played. You're Troy Crowder. You have some really incredible stories in your life. And we chatted earlier this morning, and I do this quite often. I'm like, oh, what should we talk about? Is there anything we should talk about? And you're like, oh yeah, I'm a man of firsts. And I was like, what the hell does that mean, Troy? I'm this. So I don't want to ruin the story because it's an incredible story. Yeah. Because Troy's, you had a good NHL career, but there's a couple certain things where it's like, damn, that's pretty cool. So why don't you tell me, and I'll jump in because I love cutting people off. The man of firsts, your first NHL game, it's an incredible story because not everybody gets to experience something like this. So just, tell the story, and because I thought it was a crazy story.
I'm playing junior. It's my last year of junior hockey, and we'll go to Belleville. I'm not really playing much. I get traded there or whatever. I know the coach pretty well. I played for him the year before, got traded back to the same team. And so I said, like, Matt, you're not playing me much. And he's like, well, what am I supposed to do? I got all these guys that are scoring up front. You're not scoring. Nobody wants to fight you. I said, well, put me on defense then. And he said, have you ever played defense? I said, no, but I'll figure it out. And so he puts me on defense. I end up being Brian Marchment's D partner. And so Mush was like the hip check king and pretty tough. And I was the big tough guy. So it was fun because we had a lot of space. Nobody was running down to like smoke us on a forecheck, you know? So I had a great year that year. I end up I played like 9 games in North Bay. Then I got traded to Belleville. So I had like 40 some points that year or whatever as mostly playing D, and so it was a fun year. Season ends, you know. I had a few fights that year, and, you know, it'd been a bit of a grind of a year, and having some beers, and I go down with Mush, Brian Marchman, down to see our coach at the middle of the night kind of thing after the season's over, and he starts cursing me out and calling me a few names or whatever, and I'm like, what are you getting mad at me for? He goes, I've been looking for you all night. You know, you got called up, you're going to Utica in the American Hockey League, you got to play there tomorrow. And I'm like, well, where's Utica? He's like, it's in New York. I'm like, okay, well, how do I get there? He goes, you drive there. I'm like, oh yeah, but like where? He goes, get a map. And I'm like, okay. So Mav wasn't a lovey huggy kind of coach. He was a pretty firm, old school guy, right?
And so let's just not get this confused. You're like 19, 20 years old at the time. You weren't 19, expecting to go pro after this because you did get drafted. You're obviously on New Jersey's radar. Isn't that a normal conversation to have after your season? It's like, okay, Troy, because nowadays it's like you finish your season, you go play AHL, NHL right away for these guys.
Yeah, so I never thought anything about it. Nobody kind of gave me a heads up about it. Nobody said, hey, you know, when this ends, you're going to probably get called up. There was like zero warning. So, anyways, I get called up, I go to Utica. So I go back home, have a, shower, pack my stuff, sleep for like 2 hours, get in my car, drive to Utica because it's a noon game now. So, I saw my coach at 2 a.m. So now I got to play at noon. I got to drive from Belleville to Utica, New York and play. So I get there and, they're already on the ice for warm up or whatever. And I'm just getting to the rink. So the coach runs in and finds me because I finally get to the dressing room, figure out where I'm supposed to go. And he's like, have you eaten today? I'm like, no, I've been just driving. So he goes out and I'm getting my skates on. And literally team comes back in. They go back out to get ready for the anthem. And he gives me 2 hot dogs. So I'm like pounding a couple hot dogs right before I go on ice and go out and I play. And I think I got at least 1, if not 2 fights that game. And game ends and all the guys love that I'm there or whatever, right? So anyways, play a couple more games. I got cross-checked the second game, split my chin open or whatever. I'm getting stitched up and I look up and there's my coach coming back to check on me or whatever in between periods. And there's Lou Lamoriello. And I didn't really know Lou that well, except for I saw him at training camp the year before or whatever. And So he's like, are you going to be all right? You know, I'm like, yeah, fine. Just got to get stitched up. I'll be back out for the third kind of thing, you know? So I go back out, play the third period. I think I might've fought again or whatever. Go play the last game, have another fight. And, you know, same thing. Season ends, we're done. Season's over and having some beers in the hotel or in the bar that everybody's at, you know, and chatting. And everyone's watched the New Jersey Devils last game of the season. And, end of the game, John McClain scores and they win the game. And they're like, oh my God, the Devils make the playoffs for the first time. And everyone's going, the whole team's just going bonkers, right? And I'm like, yeah, great, great. You know, like not thinking anything about it at all. Never thought I'd ever go play there, you know?
Yeah.
Same thing. I go drinking for the rest of the night and morning time comes around and the coach, I go to the rink to get my equipment to go home. And the coach is like, where the hell you been all night? And I'm like, drinking with the boys, you know, like the season's over. And says, well, you got called up to New Jersey. You know, he's like, I'm like, oh, he goes, pack up your stuff and start driving. You know, I'm like, oh, my God, okay. So I pack up, you know. And so I wasn't thinking I was getting called up to the American League, let alone the NHL. So I've got like my mom's suitcase from like 1970, whatever. It's like baby blue vinyl jumbo suitcase or whatever. I got a beaten up old car and the cheesy blazer. That's about all I got to my name, you know, maybe one leather tie or something. So as I remember, I pull into like the hotel because Lou Lamoriello wants everybody to be in a hotel during the playoffs. And I get there and Kirk Muller sees me pull out of my little crappy car and he's like, oh my God, we got to take this guy shopping. Like I got this baby blue vinyl suitcase and my jeans on or whatever, you know. And
that's funny.
So anyways, we get called. Yeah. So we get, hold on a second. We get called in or whatever, go for the big team meeting. And then Jim Schoenfeld's the coach. He calls the six of us aside. He says, okay, boys, you're not going to be on the ice with us tomorrow. I'm going to have a little meeting with you guys afterwards. Don't worry about practice tomorrow. Just meet me at the hotel lobby at whatever, 1 o'clock or something like that. Right. So we meet and go into some room and he says, listen, you're not going to play. You know, we just want, there's a couple guys that, you know, senior guys, they wanted a reward by calling him up for the playoffs and a couple young guys. He's like, hey, you guys are the future of this, you know, team. And, you know, we want you to see this and witness what's going on here and feel the energy of the playoffs and whatever. And said, so he says, tomorrow meet us at the rink, whatever, at 2 o'clock or whatever.
That's got to be pretty cool, though, for you. I don't want to cut you up, but just as a 19-year-old kid, 2 weeks before, you were thinking you were done in Belleville and that's it. Now you're like being told you're the future of the Devils.
I was planning on going fishing with my buddies back home. Like I wasn't thinking about hockey right now. I'm up in New Jersey. It's the team that drafts me. I just signed the year before.
Yeah.
So I knew I was part of the team, but I didn't really think I'd be there yet. And, you know, my game wasn't really a major goal scorer, though I had a good last junior year. I was more of the tough guy.
Well, in your defense, though, Troy, you still hadn't invented the eyelet extender yet, so you hadn't figured out the stride. I
hadn't perfected the skating yet, no.
Yeah, that was still to come.
To come, yeah. So yeah, he just, Schoenfeld comes and he says, listen, and he throws like $500 on the board, on the rink boards, and he says, listen, you guys play 3-on-3 in the end zone here and play for a good hour, sweat it out, make sure you're staying in good shape. You know, I don't want you to do drills or anything. I want you to have fun, but stay in shape. And winner takes the $500 and you guys got the bragging rights, take the other guys out for lunch and beers.
No kidding.
So I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting like a per diem, like, which was more per day than I got for a month in the OHL, like, you know, for your per diem money.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting like the opportunity for like free beer and lunch money, you know? So I was loving it. So yeah, first series we play the Islanders and, you know, we win in six or whatever. And I'm just going along for all the free plane rides or drive. Well, Islanders were close. We bus there. And so I just sit in the stands and watch hockey.
That's
awesome. Then we play Washington, same thing, you know? So basically, so we're in the Boston series now and, so they take me there and it was an unbelievable experience. You know, I go to Boston and Craig Willannon says to me, have you ever been to a NBA game before? I'm like, no. So Boston Celtics, the New York Knicks are playing or whatever, and we go to a playoff game together. And I was like, this is awesome, you know. And, you know, go to the Boston Gardens. And it's just like, my dad was a Bobby Orr fan. So I was like, oh, my God, I'm in the Boston Gardens. And the rink, you know, the dressing rooms were like hot as can be. I'm sure they cranked up the heat in the dressing rooms to try to sweat out our team or whatever. Just, but it was just a neat experience. I'd never been to Boston before. And I'm like, wow, this is wild. And so we go there and we split the games 1-1 and we come back to New Jersey and it's game three or whatever. And, you know, I've had fun during the playoffs because I'm like, I'm not playing. So I missed a few curfews, did a few things, you know, had lots of beers, whatever, but I'm sweating out every day. And so game three comes and, you know, team skates, we skate. We try to get the end of the team meal so we can get a free meal out of it, right? Munch some food in the hotel. And so then I'm back up in my room. I'm going to have a little power nap. And I just lay down. The phone rings. And I answer the phone. And it's Lou Lamoriello. And Lou's like, hello, Troy. It's Lou Lamoriello. And I'm like, hi, Lou. He's like, Troy, I'd like you to call your parents. And I'm going, oh, my God, did he catch me breaking curfew? Or what did I do? Like, I think I'm getting in trouble, right? And I'm like, why would I call my parents, Lou? And he's like, because you're playing tonight, Troy. Be ready to play. And I was like, okay. He's like, get some rest. And they just hung up. And I was like, holy crap. I'm actually going to play a game.
So can I – let's back up. What – was there any notice before the first two series that you had any chance of playing? Like, did any of the other guys play in a game? Were you guys just still, did Shoney ever say, like, be ready, we might use you? Or was this just out of nowhere?
Out of nowhere. Like, had no clue, never thought, not one bit that I think that would ever happen.
And so what do you think? Because, like you said, you hadn't played in a real game in what? Like a month and a month, probably?
Oh, yeah, over a month for sure. Like probably a month and a half, I guess.
And you're jumping into game three of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Conference Finals.
And you, now all of a sudden you have to go, was the series physical? Why did they pick you? Because you're still a 19-year-old kid. It's like, okay, what? Like,
well, it was May 5th. It was May 5th, and I turned 20 on May 3rd. So I just turned 20.
And you probably went out and just had a nice, responsible dinner and went right to bed afterwards.
Yeah. So anyways, I was just like, oh, my God, you know. So, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, you know, we got a pretty good team. So, you know, the fact that I'm playing, I'm like, I got to be ready for anything. I'm thinking, you know, maybe somebody said something or intimidated somebody. I don't know. Like, but I'm like, I was ready to fight if I needed to fight or do whatever, right? And I can't remember exactly, and I'd have to go back and, like, watch the game or whatever. But I know I didn't play – I don't even know if I played in the first period, if I just sat on the bench. But I don't think I played much, if I played at all. But I think I finally got my first shift, I think, was in the second period. And at that point, Shanahan had already fought Willie Plett, and Kenny Danico had fought, like, Bob Sweeney or somebody. And we were down 4-0. And then I got a shift and I'm like, well, down 4-0, you know, my brain tells me I should probably try to spark a little bit of something. Right. So Jay Miller and I lined up against each other and I gave him a shot off the draw and give him the look like I was going to fight him. And so he dropped the gloves and we went at it and fought. And anyways, got my 5-minute penalty and I'm in the box. And I don't know if they took a penalty right after or what happened, but anyways, we got a power play and Shanahan scored his first ever playoff goal and now it's 4-1. And so I'm like, oh, this is great. Like the fight sparked something or whatever. And then I ended up playing a ton after that. Like they played me like I couldn't believe it. Like I went from like not playing, never thinking I was playing to fighting to then I think I had like 5 shifts in the next period and a half or 6 shifts or something. So anyways, it's right at the end of the game now, maybe a minute left. And I've just had another one of my long shifts, maybe 40 seconds left in the game. And I'm skating off, and this guy, Mikael Thelvin from Sweden or whatever. Remember, I was exhausted. I was skating towards the bench, and he was just coming off of their bench. And he gave me this, like, fake, like he was going to cross-check me or something. And I just, natural instinct, because I was tired, and I was, like, screw you kind of mentality. And I threw the forearm shiver at him and I hit him and I dropped them right in front of their bench. And so he went down, I went to the bench and, you know, I'm having some water and I'm panting because I just had like a minute, 20 second shift. And I wasn't really ready for that much ice time in the first place. And so all of a sudden Schoenfeld looks at me and goes, yeah, kid, take a big drink of water, get a couple big breaths and get back out there. And I'm like, get back out there. Like, I just got off a minute 20 shift. And I'm like, I turn, I look on the ice and there's like Willie Plett, Jay Miller, Lyndon Byers. They got all their tough guys on the ice. And I'm like, oh yeah, that little forearm smash I just sent. I said, I guess this is what I got to deal with now. So anyways, puck got dumped into my corner. I'm forechecking. And just as I go to touch the puck, I look and I could see guys coming at me. And Lyndon Byers in particular made a big run at me. And just as he went to hit me, I kind of pulled back and I threw up my arm and I kind of clipped his head and tried to shove him into the boards. And we dropped the gloves and went at it. And anyways, I hit him with a few and we spun around, ended up falling on the ice. And so I'm getting kicked out of the game and he's getting kicked out of the game. And I remember skating by their bench and Terry O'Reilly's, now he's mad because I smoked this Michael Feldman. And then now I fought and their guy didn't get me very well. And I hit him with a few, knocked his helmet off. So I'm skating off the ice and Terry O'Reilly's got his foot on the bench and he's just cursing and screaming and kicking things and losing his marbles, right? And I stop and I wave at him like this. And then he just starts losing it. So I start blowing him kisses and I'm like, kiss my ass, old man, kiss my ass, whatever, right? And I'm blowing him kisses and he's losing his marbles and he's like just going bonkers, right? So anyways, I get kicked out of the game and there's like 30 seconds left, whoever. So I'm like, I'm not going to sit in the bench or in the dress room by myself. You know, I might as well wait for the boys and I'll high five them on the way through or whatever. And so I wait and wait, but like there's all this commotion. And next thing you know, I look up and my coach, which is Shoney, is like just screaming at the referee. And they're just going at it, going at it, going at it. And I'm standing because I was once the last guy left down the hall and I high fived, I was about to turn to go follow them in. And this screaming's going on. So I stop and I wait. And then all of a sudden the cameraman moves in front of me and he starts filming all this. And I'm watching it. And it's like, Shoney's like yelling, I'm yelling, I'm yelling. I'm and you can see Koharski's trying to get out of the way. And he kind of slips on the concrete a little bit off the walk path, like the carpet. And he slips and goes into the wall and kind of falls a bit or whatever. And he's saying, you pushed me. And then he's like, what are you talking about? And then calls him a few names or whatever, right? Which is, you know, you've seen the blooper of that, right? So I'm like, I run to the dressing room and I'm like, you guys can't believe what just happened. You know, and I start telling the guys whatever. So I'm just like sitting there in my room in the room with everybody going like, I just played my first NHL game. I got like two fights. I played a ton of ice. You know, I just watched my coach Schoenfeld do this. I'm like, what an unbelievable experience. So I was just pumped out of my mind, you know?
Oh, how the hell do you have the balls to do that as a 20-year-old kid, like blowing kisses to Tiger Williams and all these things? Like, it's just, did you just revert back to like, okay, it's just hockey, I'm going to go for it? Like, that's pretty ballsy, Troy.
Yeah, I don't know. It just, I had confidence, I guess, and whatever else. And I don't know, it may be just part of my personality, I guess. I'm not sure, but like, it was amazing though, right? And then so that, from that time, then the referees said they weren't going to ref the next game because Schoenfeld, they wanted him suspended or whatever, right? And so they end up not coming the referees to the game. Then they had to find referees. Lou Lamoureux decided he'd suspend Shoney then on his own and he would coach the team. And then for warm-up, the referees were like some two guys, I don't even know who the linesmen were, but they found a backup referee somewhere or whatever. Anyways, they had white helmets on, the linesmen. Like, nobody wore helmets back in the day when you're refereed, right? But these two guys were just amateur linesmen or gold judges or whatever they were. But at the start, they were wearing like our practice jerseys while they're out there. And then they switched. Finally, they got the real jerseys on. But these two linesmen wore like these white hockey helmets, which was so weird looking at that. So, yeah, so that game four was like literally just refereed by amateur referees or whatever. We got smoked that game 6-1.
No kidding.
They end up going, they won that next game. We lost 6-1 in my game. They won that game with the referees, New Jersey, then went back to Boston, ended up losing down there or whatever. And that was kind of the end of the series. But yeah, I was just like, this is like mind blowing or whatever, right? Like, this is my first game. I got called up. It's the playoffs, whatever. And so I never really thought much about it. But then I was reading a hockey news article years ago, like 2021 or something. And it was an article about the most penalties for a guy playing his first game. And his first game was the Stanley Cup playoffs. And it was a guy who had like 12 or 14 minutes in penalties or whatever. And I started thinking, geez, I'm sure I got at least that many penalty minutes, whatever. So I looked through it and I was trying to find out who. And so I found this article and I just went online again now just to refresh myself. And it's on this Reddit column or whatever. But in 2021, so I'm sure there's a couple guys since then, but there's like 147 guys that played their first ever game was somewhere in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And in that, there's only like three guys that have ever fought. I think Buck Berger and maybe Bob Halaitis or whatever his name was. I think two other guys might have fought once, and I was the only guy ever to fight twice. So I got an NHL record that shouldn't ever get broken. So anyways, that was pretty interesting just going through all that, like that history. But I never really thought about it at the time. It was just like I was just trying to do my job, you know?
Well, it's just, yeah, you're thrust into this situation and you're 20 years old and you're not a goal scorer. So it's like you do what you know well. It's just like, that's a hell of a first game in the playoffs, in the conference finals. And then you cause so much of a ruckus that your coach gets suspended.
Yeah.
Like, that's wild stuff, Troy.
We had like four fights our team had four fights. Like, Shanny fought, I fought, Danico fought, I fought again. It was awesome. Like, so imagine I'd only played in junior rinks. Then I went to an American League rink, Utica, which might have held 4,000 people or whatever. But I don't even think we were in the playoffs. It was just the end of the season. So, you know, there wasn't that many people, you know, wasn't like it was packed. And then I go to New Jersey where they've never made the playoffs before. First time ever. And then I'm now fighting twice. So, like, I remember skating to the box after the fights and, like, you know, 19,000 people screaming and chanting. And I'm just like, you could just feel the energy. And I'm like, this is awesome, you know?
Oh, yeah. So you finish up that year, they lose in the conference finals, but you're a part of the future of the Devils, right? So you're excited and you're probably excited to come back the next season to get things going, but it didn't work out that well. And this is what we talked about earlier too. So talk about that, because you got to go back that summer and go, this is going to be fantastic. Yeah. Like, I'm on the Devils' radar. I'm going to be a part of their team moving forward.
I was sure I was going to play for the team the next year, right? I played penalty kill. I played friggin' defense. I played forward. Like, they played me a lot in that game. So I thought, like, well, they obviously like me. And so I thought I was going to be a part of the team. And I had a great training camp and beat up a bunch of guys in those rookie games and did whatever and scored a couple goals. And I thought, like, okay, I'm going to play. And then Lou called me in and he said, listen, you know, we're going to send you down to the American League. We really want you to work on your game. We know you can fight. We know you can handle yourself. We want you to work on your game. Da-da-da. Tommy's really going to work with you. Da-da-da. So I was like, I could work on it here just as well. Like, you know, like, just playing with these group of guys are fast and good. Like, it's going to make me better. And, like, you know, trying to talk my way into keeping me, right? And Lou's like, no, Troy, we got you penciled in down there. You know, just keep working hard. We're going to keep an eye on you. Don't worry. You know? So I get down there and, like, instantly the coach is just like, you know, you had it easy. You know, you right from junior, a couple games with me and you're in the NHL. I'm going to show you how the real NHL is and you're going to grind it with me and you're going to do what I tell you. Anyways, he was just on me all the time and we just started butting heads. It just got worse and worse as the year went on. And I remember I pulled a neck muscle from a fight and, you know, you get that pinched nerve in your neck where you can't turn your neck one way or the other. And we were supposed to be going back to Toronto to play the Marlies in an American League game. And I couldn't play because I had a neck wrap around. And he's like, yeah, just stay home and take care of yourself, Troy. I'm like, listen, it's the only time we play the Marlies all year. My family's from Toronto. They're not driving down to New York and the American League to come see me. I said, I can just go on the bus and take the same medication I'm taking now. Like, at least say hi to my parents and visit them for a couple hours, whatever. Like, no, you just take care of, you can't play and you're not coming or whatever. Right. So anyways, that just kept snowballing. Everything just kind of, we kept butting heads or whatever. So next year I go back to training camp and he's my coach for like all my games or whatever. And I'm there for like one day and I'm just, his voice is just, I just want to grab him and thump him, you know? And I'm like, I'm not doing this again. I'm not playing another fucking 2 seconds for this guy ever again. So I just got a cab and jumped in the cab, went to the airport and went home. And then Lou called me and I said, Lou, I'm not playing for that guy. I'm not doing it. He's like, Troy, you know, we got to, you know, this and that. I said, no, I'm not, I don't even feel like playing right now. I said, I'm not even going to play. So he's like, well, take some time, get adjusted, you know, whatever. And so anyways, I just started doing stuff with my uncle. He, you know, had a little trap line, you know, in the bush and we'd go fishing, go trap and cut wood, played, you know, a little bit of fun hockey once in a blue moon with some buddies, but I hardly even skated. Didn't really do much. I was just like clearing my mind, you know. And Lou would call me every 2 weeks, every month or so. How you doing? What's going on? You thought about maybe coming back? I'm like, no, not coming back. And then it was probably late February or sometime around there. And he'd called me again. And at that point, my uncle was kind of trying to wear me down too, to go back. He's like, Troy, like how many people get this opportunity, you know? And so I was like, I don't know. I said, I just don't want to play for this guy. And so Lou called me and I said, well, Lou, I said, I'm not playing for Tommy. I said, can you find another team, another American League team or somewhere to send me to play? And he's like, well, we'll work something out. Don't worry. We'll work something out. And I said, well, second problem is like, I'm 30 pounds heavier than I was at training camp. So he goes, okay, I'll get back to you on this. And so then he calls me the next day. He goes, yeah, we got it all arranged. Got your flights arranged. So they sent me this Canyon Ranch in Arizona, which was like the premier health spa at the time. And so I get there and Bill Gullickson was a pitcher for the Astros. So the same guy who owned the Devils owned the Astros. So he's there losing some weight, getting ready for the season. I'm there to lose some weight to go back to play. So we kind of hang and work out together. But they got me on like a regiment, like where they're like working me out hard. Cause I got to lose like 30 pounds before I go back. Anyways, got to know Bill. We've golfed a little bit, had a few pizzas when we'd sneak onto the golf course because we weren't supposed to eat that kind of food. But anyways, I lost 28 pounds or 30 pounds or whatever it was. And then, so they sent me to, they just started up the East Coast Hockey League that year. First time ever. It started up. It was like six teams, I think, the first year. So they sent me to Nashville. And I played like 3 games in Nashville. And then they called me up to play the Toronto Maple Leafs because Fedosov had clipped Wendell Clark and took his knee out and Wendell missed a bunch of time. And previous to that, I think Wendell had punched Clarkie Wendell had punched Fedosov in the face and this and that. And so there was all this rumor that, you know, John Kordick was going to beat up Fedosov and whatever else. So they kind of wanted me to get ready for that game. So I played my 3 games in the East Coast League and then end up, you know, getting ready to go to play for New Jersey. And then my first game was that game. So I went right to Toronto with the team and my first shift was when Kordick went on the ice. They put me on the ice and I went out and we fought. And I think it might've been the only shift I might've got, the only shift that game. I don't know if I even got 2 shifts or not, but anyways, I don't know if we got like 5 and 10 or what we got or whatever, but Kordick never got on the ice again. I don't think I ever got on the ice again. That was it. That was kind of like my back to play. And then I played in about 8 or 9 more games, not a lot, but just played. And but then they kind of said, like, listen, we want you here. Like, we want you to play here. Train hard this summer. We want you on this team. You're not going to the American League. You're going to play here if you're ready to play. So I went back home, trained that summer, came back the next year. And then, yeah, that was like my first full year was the next year. And, first game of the season was New Jersey Devils against the Detroit Red Wings. And Bob Probert clobbered Claude Lemieux in the head with a hockey stick. So I jumped the boards and called whoever off was closest to me and skated after Proby and ended up fighting Proby. And then I cut him and got the best of them. And that's kind of like when the whole Troy Crowder like thing started, like, you know, the other, the playoffs and the other stuff was just like, you know, I'm a young kid just trying to do my best. And by then I was 22 or whatever, as a stronger, more of a man, you know, had fought American League guys, big guys. So I was kind of more ready to handle the bigger NHL guys. So, yeah, so that was kind of the start of when I really got good NHL fighting. I was good in junior, but that was against kids. And now I was ready to fight men, you know? So, yeah, that was the Probert thing happened. And then we never played each other again until like January. So then the hype between that point, like my first game of the season till the time we fought each other was like crazy, because everywhere I went, somebody wanted to either challenge me, or there was like talk in the newspaper about me coming into town. And I had this trainer, which was an interesting, he was my trainer in the American League. And then he ended up becoming my equipment trainer in the NHL. So he would go in when we'd go to play a team and tell their trainer as they're unloading equipment that I was going to fight their tough guy. And then he'd come back and tell me later that their trainer told him that their tough guy wanted to fight me. So he was kind of like the fight promoter. Like, I think he set up half the fights that I didn't even know were going to happen. So, yeah, so I went on a bit of a tear there from like the start of the season till January, where I was scoring goals. I was fighting everybody. I knocked out a few guys. And so by the time like the rematch kind of happened in Detroit, like by then it had been like 4 months of like pretty exciting times for me. Like, you know, I had 5 goals, I had 3 assists, you know, I probably had 15, 18 fights by then, you know? So it was like pretty wild. So when we'd go out, you know, for beers after a game, guys would make fun. They're like, oh, the King's here, he'll get us in, don't worry. As soon as Troy shows up, everybody gets free drinks or whatever, right? So it was a fun run, like to be able to like do whatever you wanted to do. And, you know, I was winning fights and scoring goals, and it was pretty exciting times for sure.
Well, it's really a remarkable rise, because I was just thinking while you're talking, it's like you never really had like a rookie camp or anything. Your first two NHL games were coming off of like your Utica Devils, and then you're into the Black Ace, and then you're thrust into the game. And then the next time you're coming off of like this trip to Arizona, and your first game was like, here you go, it's in February. So you didn't even have a training camp. So it's such a weird first two seasons to your career. So 90-91 is really your rookie season, where you're coming in and you have a true camp. For you coming into that camp after what you had gone through, kind of the holdout, because nobody holds out, Troy, especially someone in your position who's like a sixth rounder, not a high like profile guy. It's like a bizarre for you to just be like, I'm good. So I don't know. Did you like being chased by Lamoriello? Was that something that was like, okay, I want you to show that you want me?
No, nothing to do with that. Really. It just really came down to his, you know, I'm not a naturally, like, I want to beat you up, I got a temper kind of guy. I'm a very laid back, easygoing guy. It takes a lot to kind of get me worked up, but I'm very much a protection guy. Like, I'll take care of my friends. You're not going to mess with my family or whatever. You know, that's more my mentality. So if you want me to do something, just be nice to me and I'll be really nice to you. And so I just didn't like this whole like confrontational intimidation kind of mentality of my American League coach, and just didn't want anything to do with it. Right. I'm like, that's not how I operate. And so it was more just a respect out of me. Like, I'm like, I'm not going to get treated this way. And that's really what it was about. And I'm like, you know, my last high school year, I started a landscaping company. I was making a ton of money doing landscaping, lock stoning and whatever else. I'm like, you know, I was in the American League making $35,000. I could make $35,000 in 4 months in the summer, lock stoning driveways and doing people's backyards. So like, I wasn't really, you know, chasing the money, like, and the hockey dream was like, yeah, I want to be in the NHL, but I don't want to freaking have someone verbally abuse me every day or whatever. So it was more of just a mindset of like, you know, that's not what I want to do. It's not how I want to be treated. And that was basically the only reason that I was doing it. Right.
And so as it works the funny thing
is after internet.
Yeah, sorry, you're breaking up there. No, go ahead.
Yeah, hold on, I'm just gonna look at my thing here again. It still seems like it's going, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, so then, you know, I have my big rematch fight with Probert, and then literally, or two fights with him, but then literally, like, God, maybe 2 weeks after that, they fire the coach who I love, who plays me, you know, more than I would typically get played. Like, I was getting 5, 6, 7, 8, sometimes 9 shifts a game. You know, when I was in the American League, I was getting like 4 shifts a game or 5 shifts a game or whatever with this other coach. Well, then he comes to coach, and I think I only played like maybe 10 of the next 35 games when he was coaching, and I'd get like 4 shifts a game, 3 shifts a game. So that same coach that I didn't like in the American League that I quit was now my coach in the NHL my same rookie year. So I don't think I got another point. You know, I barely played. It was just like back to the same nonsense, right? So at the end of that year, I was a free agent, and they just came up with that group two free agency that never existed before. So it was the first year because of the collective bargaining that they had it. So I could leave as a free agent, but then the other team would have to give compensation. So because I'd fought Proby like 3 times that year and done very well, Chicago wanted me, St. Louis wanted me, Toronto wanted me. So I had interviews with every team in that conference, wanted me, St. Louis. Everybody wanted me to play for them. And so I did interviews with every team. And then Brian Murray called me and he interviewed me. And he's like, listen, this is what I'm thinking. I want you and Probert to be on the same team together. And I'm willing to outbid those other teams. And you guys can be on the same team together. And I was like, well, I'm the only tough guy in New Jersey doing all the fighting, basically. Kenny Danico was a tough guy, but he played a ton, so he, you know, they didn't want him fighting, so it was basically me all the time. I'm like, well, won't this be awesome, where I, like, instead of having to fight the other toughest guy, he's on my team. So they convinced me to sign in Detroit, but Lou Lamoriello had called me when I was a free agent, and he wanted to sign me, and I said, Lou, I said, you could put another 0 at the end of my contract. I said, I won't play for him. And Lou didn't want to set a precedent and have him fired and whatever else. And I wasn't going to play for him. So Lou just said, listen, I understand it. I get what you're saying. And I wish you the best and whatever. So we left on good terms, you know, and he understood why I was doing it. It was nothing to do with the money. And anyways, go to Detroit. And I was excited to be in Detroit. Like, couldn't wait. And I'd had a back injury in junior, like snowmobile injury, and hurt my back. And then that summer, which was like whatever, 4 years later, I was doing these deadlifts or whatever, and I kind of tweaked it again, and I was like, God, man, like, something's going on in my back. And kind of went away. I get to training camp and I'm skating, and I'm like, you know, I'm getting these little twinges in my back. The trainer, you know, does all these tests. They send me for x-rays and different things. And he's like, no, it's fine. You're fine. Don't worry about it, whatever. So we play exhibition games. And so how about this for a line? So I got Keith Primo's the center, Bob Probert's left wing, and I'm right wing, and that's my line. And I'm going, like, this is going to be the funnest year of my entire hockey career. I can't even wait for this to happen, right? So we'd go and we'd have exhibition games, and literally, like, sometimes 3 lines would change in one of our shifts because they didn't want to be on the ice with us. So it'd be like, you know, you start a line, 15 seconds later, they dump it in and change. Another line comes on, like, 30 seconds later, they dump and they change. I'm going, like, this is awesome. So we're getting points and like just dominating. And I'm like, this is going to be so great. And my back was still a little bit twingy, but nothing too bad. But, you know, and I'm having a couple of fights and whatever else, and play the first 3 games of the season. And then 3rd game, I'm in front of the net and I go to spin. And as I'm turning, I get cross-checked, but I spun kind of funny. And I guess my back was just out of line. I got hit and my leg went numb and I just dropped. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I could barely feel my leg and my foot, and I could feel pain in my back, but like my leg was really bothering me. And so anyways, I get hobbled over to the bench and I'm like, there's something wrong. Like, and then when I went to sit down, it was like almost like someone jabbed the knife into my back. And so they take me to the hospital and send me up for MRIs. And I got like 2 ruptured discs and 1 herniated disc. And so anyways, I spend the next, whatever, 5-6 months just going to Henry Ford Hospital doing therapy like every day and trying to get back and trying to get healthy. And it was kind of a neat experience too, where, like, you know, I'm in my hotel or my apartment at the time, and I'm just, you know, going to therapy. I'm not really a part of anything the team's doing because I'm going to the hospital every day and they're at their rink practicing. And I get the phone call, and, you know, a phone rings, and I pick it up, and it's Mario Lemieux calling me. And I'm like, why is Mario Lemieux calling me? I don't know him. I don't play with him. I've never played with him. And he's like, hey, Troy, it's Mario. I just, you know, I heard you got hurt, and, you know, I want to let you know I went through a bunch of back issues, and I went to this doctor and that doctor, and he explained to me how all this herniated ruptured disc work and how the body heals. And, like, it was a long conversation. And he recommended this doctor out in California and this and that. And he said, you know, if you can, don't have the surgery, try to just heal naturally. Your body will heal naturally. You'll be better in the long run. And so as I tried and I got to the point at the end of the season where I thought, you know what, still bothers me a little bit, but I can play now. I know I can do this. So I played the last 3 or 4 games this season, and it was literally the last game of the season. I got hit again. My leg went numb again, and back to the hospital. Like, yep, you ruptured that disc again, and, you know, you still have this herniation from before. It hasn't healed up yet. And so anyways, I tried, you know, to do therapy all summer, and it was still bad, and I was still having, like, leg problems and back problems. So I finally flew out to see this Dr. Watkins in California, and he looked at all my MRIs and did more MRIs, and he said, like, listen, the only way you're ever going to play hockey again is if you, like, take 2 full years off and you do therapy and you do this. And he had this whole protocol for me to do. And I'm like, but after these 2 years, I could maybe play in the NHL again. He goes, no, I'm talking, like, just like beer league hockey. Like, you'll never play in the NHL again. He goes, you've had way too much damage on your spine and this and that. You've lost too much fluid. You've ruptured this disc multiple times. And so anyway, so I just, okay, it is what it is. So I just took 2 years off and did therapy just so I could be healthy, and thought, okay, you know, just want to play beer league hockey eventually. And it was Dave Taylor's retirement party, and he was becoming the assistant general manager. They hadn't announced it yet for the LA Kings, but he'd just retired from the Kings, and they had rented some ice for a skate thing. And I brought my skates just to go skate with him and the kids and whatever else, signed some autographs with him and whatever else. And nobody shows up for the skate except for me and him. So we just go out and we start skating around, firing pucks to each other, taking some shots and talking about life and hockey. And he goes, you look pretty good, Troy. And I said, yeah, you know what? I feel pretty good. He goes, you ever think about playing? I said, you know what? I said, not really, not till right now. Like, I'm actually, this is my first time, like, skating. And I said, I feel pretty good. I said, I might try skating for a while and see if I'm good enough to play. So then I started playing some beer league hockey, and, you know, time went on and summer went on, and I played more and more and more. And so then I decided, yeah, I think I'm going to play. And I don't know how rumor got out that I was going to play, but then I got a call from the Anaheim Ducks, and they flew me out to do an interview. And so they wanted to sign me. I'm like, I haven't played hockey for almost 3 years, and, you know, they want to sign me, and didn't have a contract. So I said, listen, I don't get an agent or anything. I said, I'll get back to you. So I'm like, okay, I'm sitting in my hotel room waiting for my limo to take me to the airport and go back to Sudbury, and I got to find an agent. And I'm just sitting there, same thing. Phone rings, I pick up the phone. It's like, hey, Troy, it's Wayne Gretzky. I'm like, Wayne? He's like, yeah. He's like, you know, I know you. Anaheim. And he said, have you signed with Anaheim? I'm like, no, I don't have an agent. I said, but they want to sign me. He goes, have you ever spent any time in LA? I said, not a lot, you know, played a couple games there. But he says, well, how about I, you know, get your flights changed for you, and you come spend a few days with me here in LA, and you could maybe see if you might be interested in playing for the LA Kings. And I'm like,
Sounds pretty good, actually.
And he's like, okay, limo will be there in 20 minutes. He said, just meet out front, and it'll take you to my house. So anyways, I wait 20 minutes, phone rings, limo's here, boom, go down, jump in, go to Wayne's, and spend a couple of days hanging out with Wayne and touring around LA, meeting all of his celebrity friends and a couple hockey guys, and show me the beach area, playing golf with them. And I'm like, we're driving back now. 3 days later, I'm on my way to the airport with Sam McMaster, who's now the GM, and Wayne, and we negotiated a 1 year contract. They wanted to sign me for three, but I thought, like, you know what? I'll just sign one, see how I feel. And if I feel as good as I think I can be, you know, I'll have a good year and I'll sign for more. Cause I didn't have an agent. Nobody has given me any common sense thought process. I mean, I probably should have signed a 3 year deal, but anyway, so we worked out a deal on the way to the airport, signed it in the car, and that was it. And 2 weeks later, I was out in LA training camp. That was a pretty interesting. Going from like, I'm never going to play to like, now I'm playing with Wayne Gretzky, my, you know, teenage idol, you know, from thinking I'm never going to play hockey again.
And he just randomly calls you in the hotel room. And this is back in the day where there's no cell phones. There's no like internet. How the hell did he find out that you went to Anaheim? And he tracks you down in your hotel room and gives you a call. Did Anaheim, were they pissed? Because they probably thought they were going to sign you.
Oh, I'm sure they were pissed. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, you know, imagine you're in your small hometown and you're skating or you're coming back. So, you know, everybody in your town would hear about it eventually, right? So I started skating that summer thinking I was going to maybe try to play again. So, you know, I'm around a bunch of guys and, you know, we're out here and there. And so I'm telling people I'm going to, you know, see if I can get back in shape and play again. And Dave Taylor's from Sudbury and Sam McMaster was the GM for the Sudbury Wolves the previous year. So when I say, hey, you know, I'm telling my buddies, you know, that I skate with that I'm going out to Anaheim, they're interested in signing me. Well, then they tell their friend at the bar that night who tells somebody. So I'm sure word spread quickly that I was going out to Anaheim and I might be signing there. So somehow I guess Dave Taylor must have heard or Sam McMaster must have heard, somebody heard. And then they guess got Wayne to call me. The first they called my house and I live on a lake way outside of the city. So I'd rented a house with three other buddies actually in town. So when I was in Anaheim, Wayne had actually called there looking for me, first of all, because I guess he didn't know I'd already left. And they hung up on him twice thinking it was a prank call. And so then finally, like the third time, he's like, listen, this is Wayne Gretzky. I'm trying to get a hold of Troy Crowder. Can you take my phone number and give it to him and whatever? And so the third call, I guess one of the buddies finally said, well, he's in Anaheim. I think he went out to sign maybe in Anaheim. I know they're interviewing him or whatever. And so I guess Anaheim probably uses the Disney Hotel or whatever, I guess, you know. And so it was just a random thing that they decided to call the Disney Hotel and ask for my name to see if I was there. And that's how Wayne got a hold of me.
No kidding. And the rest is history. Yeah. So, and then,
when I get back from LA,
you've been. Hello?
You still there? Yeah. So, yeah, so when I get back from LA,
it's terrible.
And I walk in the house or whatever, right? The rental house. And, you know, my buddies aren't there, but there's a pizza box, you know, because we ate a lot of pizzas. There are about 50 of them in the front porch area. But there was one on the coffee table by where the TV and the stereo was. And it says, call Wayne Gretzky. Here's his number, whatever, on this pizza box written there, you know.
That's funny.
Hold on, I'm just going to get the door for the dog here.
No, it's fine.
All righty, I'm back.
All right, let's do the final. I'll tee you up for your story, then we can be moving on here. Yeah. I'll let you go. Does that work for you?
Yeah.
The connection's garbage. I'm sorry about that. It's just like choppy. No, I'm having a hard time with it. But all right, let me do that. All right, so like Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, you got the fights with Probert, you got this incredible career, and then it looks like you kind of, after you came back, it was good in LA, then you bounced around a little bit. One thing I did want to ask before we move on to the last thing, this St. John Mission team. You're finished in 98, 99. How do you get tied up with this league? Because I know the Quebec Senior League is known for just the toughest of the tough. How the heck do you play four games in this league?
And you see, I got zero penalty minutes. So
none.
Yeah. So basically, yeah. So here's a funny story, another weird story. So my boxing coach that I had, he was an Olympic boxing coach, and I've had him for years. He always wanted me to be a boxer. And I'm like, hey, listen, I'm playing in the NHL. I'm not going to be a boxer. But he had the Canadian heavyweight boxing champion was training with him, and he was going to Buffalo to fight Razor Ruddock in a big fight. It wasn't like for a heavyweight championship, but it was like to get seated in the top five or whatever it was. And so anyway, so he asked me if I'd come out and spar with this guy, the Canadian champ. And I'm like, listen, Gord, I haven't done anything for 2 years. I've been retired, you know? And I'm just hanging out and whatever. And he's like, Troy, like, I need him to fight somebody tall, and I need somebody who can fight southpaw and right-handed, both kind of thing, you know? And so he goes, just give me one round. And so I end up, you know, sparring with this guy. And then he's like, hey, Troy, can you come back next, you know, 2 days? And then he's like, hey, can you come back for two rounds? And so then I end up sparring with this guy quite a few times, and I was doing really well with it as well. And, so then everybody was like talking about that I was sparring with this heavyweight boxer that was going to fight Razor Ruddock. And then somehow rumors got out that I was like training to go back to the NHL or something. And I wasn't. I was just doing a favor for my boxing coach. But a guy that I knew guys out in San Jose because he invested money for them. And I used to invest money with him and whatever else. And so then I started getting phone calls from my buddies going, hey, we could use you in San Jose. Do you want to come back to San Jose and play in the NHL again? I've been retired for like 2 years. So I ended up going back to San Jose. That's when 9/11 happened. And so we had the whole lockdown with 9/11. And then we finally got kind of going again. And I think I played four exhibition games with San Jose. I had like five fights. And the fifth fight, my arm just went and like I ripped my shoulder right out of the socket kind of thing. And that was the end of it. You know, couldn't play anymore. Went for an MRI. They're like, yeah, you got a torn labrum. I got to kind of get brushed off because I'm not under contract, and then go home or whatever. And eventually I end up getting a couple more MRIs, and they're like, listen, it's torn 70% off. You know, it doesn't work anymore. You're going to have surgery. So I go through workman's comp and I'm fighting, you know, this, but while that's going on, I'm trying to like rehab it. And then I get a call out of nowhere from this team, St. John Mission. They're like, hey, you know, we'd like you to come play for our team. And I'm like, well, I said, this is pretty neat that you're calling me. I said, like, cause I'm retired for several years now. And I said, you know, I had a shoulder injury and I'm not sure if it's strong enough. And then he's like, well, why don't you try it here? You know? And so I'm like, you know what? I might as well see if I have the power to push and shove and whatever. So I just kind of did it to see how I would play in a real kind of game. So I played four games and it was an absolute circus. Like I saw things and did like we could do an hour just on what happened in that league. But I just went like, oh, listen, I'm not ready. I'm not ready for this to be my life. And my arm wasn't strong enough because I did shove a couple guys and like it felt like it was going to come right off my body. And so after four games, I'm like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks, and headed back home or whatever. But yeah, that was just more me testing my body, and they wanted to, you know, have a big gunslinger. And it was, I think the mob owned the team, the mobster's son or something owned the team at the time. And so he just wanted to have the big gunslinger, I guess. But yeah, there's a whole segment on that league, let me tell you. Just the four games I played, I couldn't even believe it.
Well, that league was fighters. We're the primo guys. They got paid the most, right? I remember they were kicking my can a little bit when I retired, because guys would go there at the end of their career and they paid decently for the fighters. And guys like Bordalo and in my age would go there. But like I'm looking at the PIMs of the guys on your team, Troy, and it's just like everybody had over 100, it seemed like.
Oh yeah, no, it was crazy. That's it was crazy. Absolutely so crazy. Like I said, I saw things there that I'm like this is its own show in itself, right? Like the game didn't even have to happen. Like you could have just had an hour or 2 hours of just hockey fights and people would have came by the boatload, you know?
That's crazy. Well, you finish up and what are you doing now? Because you ran for politics, you dabbled your foot in all these different things. And I talked to you earlier. What's going on with Troy Crowder? Because you mentioned something. You got to get off your chest here.
Yeah. So it was pretty interesting. So when I ran for politics, I mean, I was never wanted to be a politician. Like, it's like, you know, my dad told me all along, you know, it's a dirty sport, politics and this and that and whatever. But a buddy of mine, Patrick Brown, ran to be the leader of the Conservative Party. And then he was going to, you know, run for premier and, you know, all that was going on. And I knew him from Barrie because we lived in Barrie for a couple of years because my kids were playing hockey down there and my one kid was skiing. And so I did a lot of charity stuff with Patrick. And I, you know, he's a good guy. And he's like, listen, why don't you go back home and run in Sudbury? Like, we've only had once ever a conservative in Sudbury. He's like, people know you and you know me and I'll help you. And I'll make sure you get funding for whatever projects you want there. Let's make this happen. So I moved back to Sudbury. And at that time, my wife and I were kind of getting ready to split up anyways. And so she stayed down and I moved back home. And so anyways, time goes on and, you know, I don't win. And then there's the mayor's elections are right after that. So I'm like, you know what, locally you can make a lot of impact, you know, and I knew what was going on in the city and some of the bogus things that were going on. So I decided I'm going to run for mayor. And so as I'm running for mayor, I'm getting people coming up to me that have worked at the city and were former mayors and this and that, telling me about all the shady things that went on and this and that, and where this money goes. And so I'm doing a TV or an interview for a newspaper. And I just said, like, you know, we need to get some of these senior staff people, management people that run our city out. I said, there's corruption in this city. And I said, I want to clean it up. And I went on a little bit about the corruption and this and that. And so they ran this big article about it. And so probably stirred a few people the wrong way. But right around then, you know, we were probably a year and a half separated, my wife and I. And probably 6 months later, our matrimonial home, which used to be my family's resort, boathouse collapses under the snow load or whatever, right? So I go through it, and I got to go through the lawyer because it's divorce and this and that. And he's like, she has no insurable interest. You know, she's not on title to the property, only up to the date of separation. It's all yours. Don't worry about it. So we had already, you know, discussed this. I discussed with my wife and taking her off the insurance and everything else. So I'm not thinking any of it. I get her off the insurance, deal with the claim. Takes like 6 months to get the claim dealt with, finally get it dealt with. And then like a year later, my wife decides to go to the police and say that I frauded her out of this boathouse money and that she's on title to the property. So anyways, and so then 6 months after that, I get charged. Like, I don't know that she's told them this. They just call me and say, like, we're charging you, right? So anyways, I go down, I show her that she's not on title. I show them the family law rules and this and that, but they still charge me. And then they changed some charges and they did some things. I'm like, none of this is making sense. So I hire my buddies, the best lawyer in town. And then he tells me after a little while, he goes, no, I can't do this. My partners don't want me to do it. I'm like, that's weird. Like he would just not just stick up for me, you know, and then hire another guy. And then that guy gets hired by the Crown Attorney's Office. I hire another guy, then he can't do it. And then I'm going to do it myself. And anyways, like my brother hires this lawyer. And anyways, everything's going to be fine. He's going to take care of it. He states all the reasons why I should never be charged and this and that and that. And then all of a sudden, like 4 months later, he flip-flops. It's like, we should just plead to one charge or two charges or whatever. And like, I'm like, I didn't do anything wrong, you know? So anyways, this whole fiasco goes on. And just to get down to where I'm at right now is basically the Crown Attorney's Office did some shady, shady things throughout the whole process. But especially at the end of it all, when I'm actually going to the court, they changed the agreed facts and everything right before court. I don't get to see them. They lie about documents. My lawyer doesn't provide the documents that show what really happened. So I get one charge that I plead to. And then I'm like, I'm going to appeal this. So I go through with appeal, but on my own, and they do everything to delay they can. It takes like 3 years for me to get my appeal to be heard. I do the appeal. I show like 25 reasons why I got ineffective counsel. And the judge takes like months to come back with a decision, then says, nope, it wasn't ineffective counsel. So then I just go like, who is this judge? And why was she arguing with me all the time? Every time through my appeal court date, she would argue with me like and make defense for the Crown. And I'm like, this is weird. So I Google her. I find out that the judge that heard my appeal was actually the head of the Crown Attorney's Department, the highest, besides the Attorney General, she's the highest ranking Crown Attorney in Ontario. And so
a little she's shady the one that has there, to Troy.
Me getting, what's that?
Pretty shady. Seems like everybody's in bed trying to get you.
Oh, yeah. No, it's crazy. Yeah. So you got the police, you know, helping the city. Then you got this Crown Attorney who wants to make a name for herself. She does. And then she becomes a judge. And then, yeah. And she's not supposed to hear my case. So it's a conflict of interest. And so I'm going through all these appeal processes and I just keep getting the runaround. So anyways, I'm going to try to get this out as much as I can. And I'm going to get a website going and show what happened and show the characters involved here that are doing it. But like, imagine, like, I'm a fairly high profile guy and honest guy. And even when I went through the trial management, this judge who managed that process said, like, how did you ever get charged in the first place? He goes, this makes no sense to me. Meanwhile, I still keep getting denied my appeals and denied this and denied that. So it's crazy that if this can happen to me, who did nothing wrong, and I'm a high profile guy, imagine somebody who's not high profile, and imagine somebody who isn't going to take the time and the effort to fight this. Like, I've been fighting this for 6 years now. So it's my new battle, and I'm at the end now, and I'm going to make sure everybody knows what happened so that they can, you know, be aware. And I'm going to try to get a public inquiry going so that people can see really how corrupt this court system is, especially where I live in Sudbury. It's unbelievable.
Well, knowing you and the amount of effort you put into even when you got a little bit of lay spite, I'm sure this will work out in your favor, because you don't seem like you give up easily. And you're going to take your time and get this to the end of the process. So if you need any help, anybody who's listening, you want to help out Troy, get a hold of me. Like you said, he's going to have his website up soon. You can look that up. But yeah, Troy Crowder, very interesting talking to you, my friend. I hope all is well with everything you're going into. I'm sure I'll see you around the way. We can share a beer or two or three and reminisce on stuff. But yeah, any last words before I let you go, man?
No, buddy. Like I said, I enjoyed coming on. And like I said, I love hearing your stories, and I'm sure you like hearing mine. And that's kind of the fun that we have when we go do these charity events, right? We get to tell some of our stories and have some laughs. And like I said, I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing my life. So I'm having fun 99% of the time. And the other time I'm just working to get this court stuff dealt with so that people can see what's going on and we can get it straightened out. But besides that, just trying to have fun, work hard, and play a little bit of hockey.
That's what it's all about. All right. Well, thank you for joining me, Troy. I appreciate it, man. And everybody go support Troy. And I appreciate everybody listening. We'll talk to you next time. Cheers.